I can't say I claim any major credit or major role in it, but it's nice to know you had a little role in something like that finally getting done. There was, on the other side, in terms of things that come to you, I remember a case in which a very prominent lawyer came to the senator on behalf of some people in Baltimore who wanted a particular small adjustment in a tax bill. And a very technical issue. Through the luck of the draw, pretty much, I was the staff person who went to that meeting. So I got the project. Had no idea what I was doing. This was not my field.
Private philanthropist.
Yeah. But managed to ferret out just enough about it to write a letter to the committee and to do a little statement, which we ran through the lawyer's office to be sure it was accurate and so on, and they wound up thinking I had a law degree. In fact, I still have that letter somewhere. This is my law degree from Arnold and Porter, which became an office joke. That's the sort of thing that you do because it acquires a certain kind of fascination of its own, just as an operation. But it certainly wasn't on my personal agenda to try to straighten out the tax problems of the philanthropists in Baltimore.
Were you particularly interested in urban affairs? Or was that just part of the...
Well, I'm much more interested in urban affairs, say, than in agriculture. And...
You missed those issues in the early 60s. He was heavily involved.
Goodness, yes.
Cows,
missed
wheat.
A certain amount of that. Well, that became one that
Cloud
he knew...
That,
that's an example of something that he knew so much about that he didn't need any staff. He was so well-versed in that that... all you had to do was answer the mail and field the phone calls and give him the messages. He dealt with the farm people. He is a farmer. He understood it all. And so he did our staff work on that one, in a sense. Thank God. Yeah, my orientation is much more toward a whole panoply of kind of issues of urban society. And... plus this civil liberties issue and interest. So I tend to be much more enchanted with those.
This is the continuation of the interview on the 10th of March with Carrie Johnson. Tell me about how the legislative department changed when you got to the Senate.
Well, first of all, it grew, and that meant a lot of things, lots of kinds of change. It became possible for each of us, and each of us is a gradually growing number, to do a lot more specialized work, to do a lot more that was legislative-related work, as opposed to constituent-driven work. That also changed because individual senators have much more opportunity to have input into things, so that it wasn't as idle for you to put together an amendment for a junior member of the minority as it was, say, on the House side, which made it much more professional in a sense, much more challenging, much more fun. It changed in that senators generally delegate more. They have more people to delegate it to. And, you know, the whole structure of the job is a little different. So that you are immediately have the opportunity, at least, to get into much more of a network of staff people who are similarly more or less specializing in various kinds of issues, whom you can work with in rely on and learn from. Again, you're a little more insulated from your constituents. Someone else takes the phone calls from Montgomery County, for example. So that in that sense, all those ways it grew, it became a little less, a little more disorganized from time to time. When you have more people, each of whom is on a fairly long leash, you tend to get them going in a variety of directions, and sometimes no one person really has a handle on everything that's going on.
Was there much thought given very specific kind of manner to how to structure the legislative staff? Did someone go and look at how other senators structured their staff, or?
Well, let's start with the caveats. You have probably seen more memos about office organization than I have lately. You probably found some that I've long forgotten about.
I found none. That's why I'm asking. At this point, none.
Well, I don't know that there were any. There was an awful lot of recurrent thought, concern, efforts to organize in some way that made sense. And it wasn't just the legislative department, it was the whole office as it grew. Those were continually getting undermined, superseded, and otherwise put on the shelf, partly because everybody was so busy, partly because none of them worked very well. The atmosphere just wasn't conducive to being organized, neither is Senator Mathias. Neither is the Senate schedule. And neither are a bunch of young hotshots, including me, who come in wanting to carve out our own little staff domains. This is the constant problem on the Hill. And it becomes much harder when you're dealing with a boss who is himself not much of a believer in hierarchy and in management in the charts and boxes sense, and is much more inclined to deal with staff people one-on-one than in meetings where possibly you have a chance to acknowledge some kind of hierarchy. So that there was kind of continuing concern, a lot of it was resolved simply by people kind of watching what everybody else was doing. And a lot of conversations among any two staff people or any three staff people, which were not hard since at the beginning, particularly we were all jammed into one or two rooms. The space problem on the Senate side was not much different from the space problem on the House side. So that you knew what other people were up to.
If I had been in your position, having had the kind of full panoply of legislative agendas at my disposal, and now all of these are being handed over to young hotshots, as you put it.
I wasn't so far from being a young hotshot myself.
But you've been around for a while.
It's not over, don't exaggerate.
And allegedly, were the expert on a lot of these issues. Was that a difficult situation? Were there staff?
Well, there were difficult aspects.
Differences.
One thing that made it less difficult in many respects is that much as I suppose from time to time that occurred to me, I should be running this little empire, this should be these should be my troops, by seniority. But I realized very quickly that I'm not a manager. I'm much more interested in doing certain projects and taking time to write something well, pursuing research myself, delegating things, yes, like you like nothing better than the chance to delegate a lot of small projects to almost anyone who's there with a handout. It may be an intern, it may be a secretary, it may be an assistant, whatever. Just say, here, you know, do it. And that, from my perspective, was a wonderful way to operate, as long as you were delegating to people who would do things the way you wanted to do it. I became very sympathetic with Mac on this point, because I gradually realized that I was about as unsystematic as a supervisor as he is. And therefore, it was silly for me to try to, you know, have any pretensions to being a manager of a legislative department. I really didn't want to be. I was much more content to be sort of senior and to be able from time to time on things that I thought really mattered, at least sort of claim the last cut or the last edit of something, or to be able to review something and say, no, that isn't consistent with what he did last year, or this is, or why don't you do it this way, as opposed to having supervisory authority all the time. I don't think that's much rationalization. It reflects a lot of my own personality and the way I like to work. It also, of course, was terribly convenient because that's the way things wound up working anyway.
Did anybody play that managerial role in the first couple of years in the Senate, in terms of legislative?
Well, in terms of legislative, what happened was that the succession of the first additions to the staff were a Judiciary Committee person. Well, that was a fairly well-defined role.
Yeah. There was someone named George Brown who came.
Yeah, George Brown was there for a while, and then Joel Abramson was there. I may not have these in order.
Stan Darling.
And Stan Darling.
First of all, it was George Brown. He wasn't there very long.
No, he wasn't.
Was that some choice of his? Or?
Primarily. And Stan was there for a couple of years, I think. Joel for a while. But Judiciary Committee was a defined beat.
Were they housed physically with you, or were they?
Yeah, they were, at least in those years.
And they were paid by the committee, or were they?
I think so. At least after a while, he began to acquire committee staff slot. And then, of course, after he became ranking on the DC committee, we had a slot there, and the last year or two I was in the office, I was over there and took most of my projects with me, so that I wasn't just doing DC committee work, but was over there. And by that time, there was so much crowded congestion in the main office that it was a relief to be over there.
Now, you were over there. Who was with you in the...
Well, of course, over there was simply an office in the other Senate office building where the DC committee staff offices were. Dorothy Herbert, who was combination secretary and assistant, after a certain amount of time, Clarence McKee, who was hired from Senator Javits' staff to work on DC issues. And
we'll see on the committee payroll as well.
And a sort of rotating cast of interns and people who were there for a while, doing a variety of things.
Now, let me as I perceive the files, there's this judiciary person, and there's you in 69.
Hmm.
And then there are some other people who, it really seems to me like they don't get going until 70, but maybe I'm wrong. There's a government operations, education, health,
mm-hmm.
aging, consumer protection, commerce, that sort of person.
Right.
Someone named George Moore
mm-hmm.
and Jane Engel
right.
working together. Tell me how that evolved, that slot.
I am not sure how it evolved in terms of payroll structure, but it evolved because of committee work, and once particularly you are on a committee or you get into a given area, of course you get bombarded with things that you are potentially going to have to vote on and have to have some knowledge on and need some backup on. Many of those were areas that were really sort of secondary in the senator's interest. So that it was a natural to have a relatively junior staff person who would bird dog them all mm-hmm. and handle the mail and keep abreast of what was happening in committee and so on. And it was that kind of slot.
I noticed that initially when the senator went to the Senate, he was on the Aerospace and Aeronautics Committee, to move from there to...
Yeah, that he just there was a vacancy there. And
is he just no interest in that?
No, not particularly, I don't think.
And then there was this Foreign Affairs Defense slot,
mm-hmm.
which Sam Goldberg,
mm-hmm.
And then later Tina Martz filled.
Right.
That, again, seems to start in about 70.
Well, his interest in that did not start in 70. His interest in that
sure.
had always been there.
Sure. You had done the...
Well, I had done some of it. A lot of it he had done himself. He had had... assistance on a lot of issues from outside people. And... from other senators' staff who were experts on foreign policy, which none of us ever pretended to be. And as he got more into it, and the Senate really was his first opportunity to really display any competence on that, in that whole range of issues, which he did right away. His, you know, his first speech in the Senate was on the ABM, and that was worked on very hard. It was in the days when the first Senate speech still meant something. So that a number of people...
Did you work on that?
I worked on it pretty much in terms of copy editing kinds of functions, not the substance of it.
Who did that?
I can't remember the names, but there were a couple of people from outside university people, defense experts who were involved in a lot of discussions, awful long period of evolution of the arguments involved in that, consultation with other senators, John Sherman Cooper, for instance, was one of his mentors on foreign policy, so to an extent was Senator Case, so was Senator Mansfield, and there were any major statement like that was really worked out to a large extent by him with a lot of like-minded people.
Mm-hmm. There was someone on the staff named Carl Rosenberger. What?
Who did a whole series of miscellaneous kinds of things, some of which might be legislative, some of which might be sort of projects, you know, involving a particular grant or a facility or an application for something, a community situation he was involved in. That sort of miscellany, of course, grows immensely when you become a statewide politician. You have to worry about everything from Dundalk to the National Highway, and you need more, that whole area grows, and sometimes that overlaps with legislation.
Was he handling environmental energy issues that overlapped with what you were doing?
It's possible.
The other person I'd like to ask you about is Terry Barnett. When he came, what was his role on the staff?
He was doing basically legislative work. And of course evolved more into, my impression is, more Judiciary Committee related things and variety of other issues as well. He came, I can't quite put a sequence on this, but he came at the time when I was getting much even more focused and more detached from a lot of the day-to-day run-of-the-mill stuff that came in, which was partly just a matter of choice. Some of that he picked up. How his role evolved after early 72, I can't tell you.
Right. He eventually becomes what they title a legislative director, I think, mm-hmm. after you're gone. And what I'm searching for really is a kind of sense of whether there was any legislative director in the period when you were there, and I think what you're telling me is that in large measure there wasn't.
Well, yes and no. There was a lot of staff turnover in those first few years. And a certain amount of turmoil.
Do you have a sense of why?
Because it was a new situation for the old people, and it was not very well defined in many respects. And because of the senator who himself is not a manager by temperament or background or anything else. Lawyers are not good administrators in many cases. Kept trying to find someone who would organize and could make this growing ship run fairly smoothly, and it was very hard to do. For a whole series of reasons. So that people kept taking a crack at it, and
what reason?
Something would defeat them, and then someone else would take a crack at it, and so on. Some of them I think I've alluded to in terms of the nature of the Senate, for example, the swirling nature of issues, the difficulties of organizing too well someone who operates out of his hip pocket to a large extent. Some of the personalities involved, the general press of business, which gave people precious little time to sit back and shape up at any given time. There was really no chance to have an orderly start, even, because coming into the Senate was a matter of really bringing a lot of your old stuff along and unpacking it in a different office, where you were already getting more mail. I think if, in that sense, someone who comes into the Senate from a state-level job or someplace other than the House, at least that gets a clean start. He didn't. Mm-hmm. And spent an awful long time trying to figure out how this mechanism should be organized. There was also the fact that he was, at that time, really a rising star, and there were more and more pressures. It was a very difficult time, so that both the pressures of the late 60s and early 70s, particularly involving the war, and the fact that he was becoming more and more prominent all the time, because the way he was politically responding to that situation put in a lot of added burden on it. It was partly just busyness, partly personalities, partly just the nature of things. It's very hard to be too orderly when you are constantly having to run off to meet with yet another group of 20 people from Baltimore who are against the war. When you're always behind answering mail, when the phone is always ringing, when you just wish that you didn't have to manage this place, that everything would just run as smoothly as, you know, I suspect there were any of six of us who would think, gee, if I could just clone myself, it would be beautiful. It would work. When you had people in who are not used to speaking the same shorthand that you know, and that several of you do speak, and it would get more complicated when you have a person from time to time who did try to impose some systems and some order on this kind of mass of people.
Who specifically?
Well, in various ways, there were a series of AAs. Mm-hmm. Al Abrams, Sam, Sid Hurlburt, who all took a crack at it, very different kinds of cracks. But for a variety of reasons, none of them totally succeeded.
Mm-hmm. When the senator became ranking minority on the D.C. committee, a bit of time passed before you were named the minority staff director.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there was a memo went around saying that you had been appointed and you were going to go out and celebrate. Tell me how that transpired.
I'm not totally sure I remember, except that I had been doing that work before he became ranking. There was a staff person who had been Senator Prouty's staff person who was there for a while, and there was sort of a decent interval, among other things, involved in that. Part of the fun of getting that title, other than that it involved a small raise, was that it was such a wonderfully ambivalent title. No one was quite sure what minority you directed when you were, you know, white Republican woman in the D.C. committee. So that people were never quite sure. It was an interesting title to have, but it really it kind of ratified a substantive change that had already taken place, or substantive evolution that had already mm-hmm. taken place. But it made it a lot easier to deal with people to have a title.
Yeah. Did your role change with that kind of move, or was it?
Well, it changed. Sure, it changed in a couple of respects. One, that he became the lead Republican on a committee on which the junior members really didn't focus much. It was a very minor committee. except as far as the district was concerned. So that all of a sudden, particularly since he got along so well with Tom Eagleton, they were running this little part of the show. And we could pursue the things that he wanted to, could frame issues in the way that he wanted to, could at least collaboratively with Eagleton decide what happened.